Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Oversight Democrats just got a hold of the Jeffrey Epstein birthday book and note that, of course, was sent by Donald Trump to Jeffrey Epstein. This note, Donald Trump has said, does not exist. Well, once again, he is lying to the American public and is leading a White House cover-up.
The House Oversight Committees released new documents related to the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein, including a 50th birthday book with messages from friends, including a note and sketch of a naked woman apparently signed by Donald Trump. As the White House faces growing calls to release the Epstein files, we'll look at a major New York Times expose about how America's largest bank, J.P. Morgan Chase, enabled Epstein's crimes and profited from him while ignoring major red flags. Then to Trump's threats to wage war on Chicago. ICE has just launched a major operation in the city days after Trump posted a message declaring Chapocalypse Now, a reference to the Vietnam War film Apocalypse Now, which contained this iconic scene.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
In Trump's message, he wrote, I love the smell of deportations in the morning. To talk about Trump's immigrant crackdown, the militarization of U.S. cities from Chicago to Los Angeles, and the film Apocalypse Now and his reference to it, we'll be joined by the Pulitzer Prize-winning writer Viet Thanh Nguyen. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's escalating its attacks on Gaza City and has issued orders to forcibly displace the city's entire population of nearly 1 million people. On Monday, Israeli planes dropped leaflets ordering Palestinians to head to Al-Mawasi, a coastal strip of barren land Israel's designated as a so-called humanitarian zone, despite frequent deadly attacks on the area. Israel's latest forced evacuation order comes as Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu boasts of blowing up high-rise buildings across Gaza City and warns of even more deadly attacks.
All this is only an introduction, opening act to the powerful main act, which is the ground maneuver of our forces who are now assembling and organizing into Gaza City. And this is why I say to the residents of Gaza, I take this opportunity, listen carefully, you have been warned, leave now.
Israel's defense minister says his forces have leveled 30 major buildings across Gaza City and threatened to bring more down. Among the high-rises bombed to rubble is the Al-Roya Tower, which housed the Palestinian Center for Human Rights. This is a displaced Palestinian mother whose family was sheltering in a tent near a Gaza high-rise that was blown up Monday.
I am afraid for my children. I am afraid for myself, and I'm afraid for those around me. The Israelis have no mercy. Whatever they say, they carry out. It's not that they are only trying to scare us or make us leave. They are actually killing us, burning us. Around 4 days ago, they burned children in a tent. And here we are, next to the towers. We live here, which means that shrapnel could have hit us.
Gaza health officials say Israeli attacks since dawn have killed at least 35 Palestinians, including children and people seeking food. Meanwhile, health officials report six more Palestinians died of starvation over the past 24 hours due to Israel's blockade. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces carried out violent raids Monday that killed two 14-year-old Palestinian boys. Both Mohammed Sari Omar Mascala and Mohammed Sari Omar Mascala were killed by Israeli fire in the Jenin refugee camp. The stepped-up raids follow Monday's shooting attack in occupied East Jerusalem that left six Israelis dead and 12 others wounded. In the wake of that attack, Israel's far-right finance minister Bezalel Smotrich said the villages that the two Palestinian attackers came from should, quote, become like Rafah and Beit Hanun, a reference to cities in Gaza reduced to rubble by Israel. On Monday, Israeli forces released footage of engineers preparing to destroy the homes of the alleged gunmen, part of a policy of collective punishment often deployed by Israel against the families of Palestinians accused of crimes. In Tunisia, activists with the Global Samoud Flotilla say one of their main boats preparing to bring humanitarian aid to Gaza was attacked by a drone overnight Monday. Journalist Youssef Omar was on the deck of the ship when the apparent bombing occurred.
Guys, I was sleeping right here on this mattress, and I hear this explosion and a big ball of flames, like burning the sides of your face. And then down here, you can see exactly what has happened. It landed here. The drone, it landed here, and it just, a big explosion happened right next to our diesel tanker.
Tunisia's National Guard disputed the activist's account of the explosion, saying the fire appeared to have started in a life jacket caused by a cigarette butt or a lighter. That claim directly contradicted by surveillance video showing a trail of fire falling into the ship and exploding into flames. This is Yasmin Ajar, a member of the Global Samoud Flotilla.
They have bombed a boat once again with civilians on it in Tunisian territory. This is an attack against Gaza because they don't want us there. So we need you to mobilize. Let's not stay quiet.
In Germany, five members of the Direct Action Group Palestine Action Monday broke into a weapons factory operated by Elbit Systems, a major supplier to Israel's military. Video released by Palestine Action shows an activist using a crowbar to pry open a door. The activists are then seen smashing equipment and spraying, painting graffiti, denouncing Israel's assault on Gaza. Nobody was injured during the group's acts of sabotage, and people ultimately arrested all five. Police arrested all five without resistance. Palestine Action later published a video by a member claiming responsibility.
My name is Leandra, and you are watching this video because last night I took action against Elbit Systems in Ulm, Germany. This criminal corporation makes millions of dollars year after year, especially since 2014, out of the extermination of the indigenous people of Palestine and the occupation of their land. Most of the drones bombing the hell out of Gaza are being made by Elbit Systems. The surveillance systems of the walls that made Gaza an open-air prison and the humanitarian aid blockade possible are made by Elbit Systems.
The action by Palestine Action Germany came after British police arrested nearly 900 people Saturday at a protest in London against the UK government's ban on Palestine Action under the Terrorism Act. On Monday, the artist Banksy took credit for a mural that appeared on the Royal Courts of Justice depicting a British judge in a wig using a gavel to attack a man lying on the ground and holding a sign spattered in blood. Guards later covered the mural in black plastic. Authorities say it will be removed. Officials in Lebanon say at least five people were killed and five others wounded Monday as Israeli warplanes struck parts of the eastern Bekaa Valley. It's Israel's latest violation of a ceasefire deal signed last November. Separately, Syrian media reports Israel's Air Force bombed targets in Homs in central Syria, as well as the coastal city of Latakia and the historic city of Palmyra. Syria's foreign ministry called Israel's latest strikes a blatant infringement of Syrian sovereignty and a threat to regional stability. Meanwhile, Yemen's Houthis have claimed responsibility for a drone attack on an airport near the Israeli Red Sea city of Eilat. Two people were injured in the attack, which follows Israeli strikes in late August that killed the Houthi prime minister and other top officials in Sana'a. In Nepal, the prime minister, K.P. Sharma Oli, has resigned amidst anti-corruption demonstrations that continue to roil Nepal. At least 19 people were killed and over 100 injured Monday as authorities cracked down on the protests, with police firing rubber-coated bullets and tear gas at protesters trying to storm the parliament in Kathmandu. Organizers dubbed the protests demonstrations by Gen Z, as young people take to the streets to condemn government corruption and a ban on social media platforms.
Every corruption in the country, from the local level to federal level, all the Nepalese citizens are fed up of corruption. Every youth are going outside the country, so we want to protect our youth and make the country's economy better. For that, we need a new youth, new power, and new politicians who are well-educated to move the country forward.
The Trump administration's asking the Supreme Court for an emergency order to allow it to freeze $4 billion in foreign aid that was already allocated by Congress. For the first time in nearly half a century, President Trump's relying on the Impoundment Control Act, which gives the president the authority to request the cancellation of funds approved by Congress. This follows a federal judge's ruling last week that the administration's required to spend the funds. A study by the Lancet Medical Journal found that foreign aid programs funded by USAID over the past two decades have helped prevent more than 91 million deaths globally, including the deaths of 30 million children. The Supreme Court's paused a federal judge's ruling that barred federal agents from making immigration stops and profiling people based on their appearance or the languages they speak, while the Trump administration appeals the case. Attorney General Pam Bondi praised Monday's 6-3 ruling by the court's right-wing majority, writing on X, quote, "Now ICE can continue carrying out roving patrols in California without judicial micromanagement," unquote. Justices did not state their reasons for overturning the lower court's ruling. In a dissenting opinion, Justice Sonia Sotomayor wrote, quote, "We should not have to live in a country where the government can seize anyone who looks Latino, speaks Spanish, and appears to work a low-wage job," she wrote. Los Angeles city officials and immigrant rights groups condemn the Supreme Court's ruling. Armando Gudino is director of the Los Angeles Worker Center.
By siding with the Trump administration, this court's majority has revealed itself as highly prejudicial and has further empowered authoritarianism in this country. Immigration agents are now being given the power to profile, stop, detain, and arrest people because of the color of their skin, the language they speak, or the work that they do. In doing so, they have effectively legalized racial profiling and, by extension, racial discrimination.
The Department of Homeland Security says it's begun Operation Midway Blitz, a stepped-up mass deportation campaign spearheaded by Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Monday's announcement came just 2 days after President Trump declared, quote, "Chicago about to find out why it's called the Department of War," unquote, in a social media post evoking the 1979 film Apocalypse Now in the Vietnam War. Trump also wrote, "I love the smell of deportations in the morning," a reference to one of the most infamous lines in the film, "I love the smell of napalm in the morning." We'll have more on Trump's threats against Chicago and Los Angeles later in the broadcast, as well as the references to Apocalypse Now with the Pulitzer Prize-winning Vietnamese-American author Viet Thanh Nguyen. A prominent nonviolent activist from Moroccan-occupied Western Sahara has been detained by federal immigration officers. Jamal Fadel was seized by masked ICE agents at Manhattan's notorious federal building at 26 Federal Plaza on August 25th after a routine immigration hearing, an arrest that was caught on video.
Stand back! Stand back!
Move back!
This is This is the freedom. I'm coming to my process immigration.
What country are you from?
I'm from Western Sahara.
Jamal Fadel is from the occupied city of Boujdour in Western Sahara. He's been protesting nonviolently against Morocco's occupation since he was a high school student and was threatened by Moroccan authorities so many times that he left to seek political asylum in the United States. He's currently being held by ICE at the Moshannon Valley Processing Center in Pennsylvania. His attorney expects ICE will move for an expedited removal hearing. If deported to Morocco, Fadel faces lengthy imprisonment, torture, or worse. In a speech at the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. Monday, President Trump downplayed the seriousness of domestic violence while claiming crime is down after he deployed National Guard troops to the District of Columbia.
And much lesser things that take place in the home they call crime. You know, they'll do anything they can to find something. If a man has a little fight with the wife, they say this was a crime, see? So now I can't claim 100%. But we are a safe city.
Trump's downplaying of domestic violence at the Museum of the Bible came as the House Oversight Committee released a birthday note with a sexually suggestive drawing signed allegedly by Donald Trump to sex offender Jeffrey Epstein back in 2003. The committee had subpoenaed Epstein's estate for the birthday book and other files. Despite the note containing his signature, the White House denied the letter was from Trump, saying he, quote, did not draw this picture and he did not sign it, unquote. A second page of the birthday book featured an image of Epstein holding a large check. Democratic lawmakers said the photo showed Epstein and a longtime Mar-a-Lago member joking about selling a, quote, fully depreciated woman to Donald Trump for $22,500. This follows a request by the Justice Department to a federal judge to reject NBC News' request to unseal the names of two Epstein associates who both received wire payments of $100,000 and $200,000 from Epstein back in 2018. As part of his non-prosecution plea deal with federal prosecutors in Florida, Epstein helped ensure his associates would not be prosecuted. Meanwhile, a New York Times investigation has found that J.P. Morgan Chase spent years bankrolling Epstein and ignored red flags and suspicious activity. We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast with the New York Times reporter who exposed this story. And a federal appeals court has rejected President Trump's attempt to overturn his $83.3 million verdict for defaming the writer E. Jean Carroll. In their unanimous opinion, the judges wrote, quote, the jury's duly rendered damages awards were reasonable in light of the extraordinary and egregious facts of this case, unquote. This comes as President Trump and his lawyers said that they intend to ask the Supreme Court to review the jury's $5 million verdict that he sexually abused E. Jean Carroll. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. When we come back, the New York Times exposes how J.P. Morgan Chase enabled the crimes of the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Stay with us.
Sola voy con mi pena, sola va mi condena. Correr es mi destino para burlar la ley. Perdida en el corazón de la grande Babilón. Me dicen clandestino por no llevar papel. Pa una ciudad del norte. Soy una raya en el mar, fantasma en la ciudad. Mi vida va prohibida, dice la autoridad.
Un saludo de la peligrosa para la misteriosa por allá en México.
Lula Downs performing Manu Chao's Clandestino for Democracy Now!'s 25th anniversary virtual celebration in the midst of the pandemic. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The House Oversight Committee has released more documents from the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein's estate, including a birthday book given to him by friends. The book includes a sexually suggestive note and sketch of a naked woman that appears to be signed by Donald Trump. In the text, Trump says, "We have certain things in common, Jeffrey." It concludes with Trump writing, "A pal is a wonderful thing. Happy birthday, and may every day be another wonderful secret," unquote. The White House has denied the letter was created by Trump, but the New York Times has revealed Trump's signature is very similar to his signature on other documents from that period, a simple Donald. A second page of the birthday book featured an image of Epstein holding a large check. Democratic lawmakers said the photo showed Epstein and a longtime Mar-a-Lago member joking about selling a, quote, fully depreciated, quote, unquote, woman to Donald Trump for $22,500. As pressure grows on the Trump administration to release the full Epstein files, we turn to look at how the country's largest bank, J.P. Morgan, enabled Epstein's sex trafficking operation and profited from its ties to Jeffrey Epstein. On Monday, the New York Times published a major expose on J.P. Morgan's ties to Epstein. It's based on more than 13,000 pages of legal and financial records. According to the Times, J.P. Morgan processed more than 4,700 transactions, totaling more than $1.1 billion for Epstein, including payments to some of the women who were sexually trafficked. We're joined now by David Enrich, deputy investigations editor for The New York Times. He co-wrote the piece headlined "How J.P. Morgan Enabled the Crimes of Jeffrey Epstein." David, welcome back to Democracy Now! Why don't you start with that headline? How did J.P. Morgan enable the crimes of Jeffrey Epstein?
Well, for many years, J.P. Morgan was basically the primary bank serving Epstein. And in the course of the 15 years that it worked with him, it did a number of things. And first and foremost, it set up accounts for not only him and his companies, but also quite a few of his victims who had been trafficked into the United States, and it arranged for Epstein to be able to pay those victims both in the U.S. and in Eastern European countries and in Russia. The bank lent him money that was associated for projects associated with sex trafficking. It, in some cases, just paid him cash, millions of dollars of it over the years, to thank him for some of the services he had provided the bank. And over again, when people within the bank raised red flags about how much cash Epstein was withdrawing and some of the suspicious wire transfers he was doing, people higher up at the bank essentially looked the other way because they wanted to keep this guy as a lucrative client. And so, and basically, Epstein's sex trafficking operation, we now know, operated in large part because he had unfettered access to the global financial system. And for many years, it was J.P. Morgan that was providing him with that access.
Take us through the timeline. And David Enrich, what about other banks? Did Jeffrey Epstein try to bank with other banks? I mean, this perhaps the most prestigious, the largest bank in the United States. But wasn't he turned away by bank after bank?
Well, there's some question about who turned him away and when. And certainly we know that in 2013, after J.P. Morgan, after years of internal pressure, finally parted ways with him, he went right on to another bank, the German lender Deutsche Bank, which is, you may recall, is the bank that was willing to do business with Donald Trump, among others. But in the history of J.P. Morgan and Jeffrey Epstein starts in the late 1990s. And Epstein at the time was a very wealthy but kind of mysterious guy. The bank itself, in documents that we've reviewed, didn't have a whole lot of information on where his money was coming from, who he was working for, or why he was important. All they knew is that he was parking a ton of money at the bank and generating millions of dollars a year in fees. And over the ensuing years, Epstein's role inside the bank became more and more important. And it involved not just doing business that made money for the bank, but he introduced the bank to a lot of potential clients, to government leaders like Benjamin Netanyahu, and advised them on strategic initiatives and provided them kind of with troubleshooting advice along the way. So he was a really indispensable part of the bank and an indispensable partner, I think, to some of the bank's very highest ranking executives.
Now, if you could talk about the significance of this. In fact, it was two Israeli prime ministers, Benjamin Netanyahu, that he brought to the bank, as well as Ehud Barak.
Yeah, so there's a laundry list of rich, powerful, famous people that Epstein counted among his acquaintances. And he was extremely adept at using those connections to ingratiate himself with lots of other people and institutions. J.P. Morgan was very eager to do business with him and to accept the introductions he was offering. And the relationship that Epstein had with J.P. Morgan was really important to Epstein because it hooked him into the global financial system and provided him with money. But I think to an equal degree, it also imbued him with legitimacy and credibility that was really important to him, especially after he was first in 2006 indicted and arrested on sex trafficking related charges. And then in 2008 pleaded guilty and was then incarcerated on similar charges. And all the while, J.P. Morgan continued to bank him and for years afterwards as well. And that was even though people within the bank, including at a pretty senior level, were aware that what Epstein had been accused of, what he had pled guilty to, and were concerned that there was a lot more going on here that hadn't even become public. And yet they decided institutionally that the right thing to do was to continue working with him, primarily because he was making them a ton of money.
He also brought to the bank Sergey Brin, right, the founder of Google, who banked with them to the tune of something like $4 billion.
Yeah, and there, again, there's a long list of people that he made introductions to. And I think the bank would say that, you know, they are one of the biggest, most prestigious banks in the world, and they don't have any trouble finding clients and on their own or talking to government leaders on their own. But there is no dispute that Epstein, at least with one of the very highest ranking executives of the bank, was someone who the bank was turning to over and over again for advice, for counseling, for introductions, and most of all, for financial services. And so this is a long symbiotic relationship. And I think that the fact that this full story hasn't been told until now is really emblematic in some ways of how many mysteries continue to swirl around Jeffrey Epstein and his money and how much more digging there is to do by everyone from journalists to congressional investigators who are, I think, belatedly getting really serious about this.
So, David Enrich, if you can explain, I don't know if everyone knows how banks work. What does it mean when there are red flags? What were those red flags? What was J.P. Morgan ignoring? When do they have to report to the feds about these red flags? And then we'll talk about Jess Staley and Jamie Dimon.
Sure. So, there was a range of red flags. The most obvious of them internally at the bank was that Epstein, he had hundreds of millions of dollars parked at the bank, but he was taking out so much money in cash on a regular basis that it was a real warning sign. And banks are kind of trained to be on the lookout for people that are regularly withdrawing huge sums of cash. And by huge sums, I mean, you know, tens of thousands of dollars virtually every month. And this drew attention within the bank. And yet, when it got escalated to higher ups, people looked the other way. And the reason it draws attention is that cash is a common currency for criminals. And sure enough, what we now know is that almost identical amounts of Epstein was taking out amounts of money that were almost identical to what we now know he was paying to young women and girls as part of a sex trafficking operation. Another big red flag was that he was wiring money there were patterns of him wiring money to all over the world, including to banks and individuals in Eastern Europe and Russia that we now know. In fact, we knew it to some degree at the time as well, that this was a part of what appeared to be a sex trafficking operation. And these are things that anti-money laundering experts and compliance officials within J.P. Morgan and within the banking industry in general, these are pretty clear, well-established red flags for possible criminal behavior. And sure enough, the bank's teams of anti-money laundering experts and compliance officials recognized this more or less in real time, and in some cases reported it to the government, but did not take it seriously internally. And, you know, they had discussions about these are suspicious things that are happening. We don't know exactly what he's using this money for, but these are red flags. And in many cases with other bank customers, we can see that when a bank customer gets accused of wrongdoing or is engaged in potentially suspicious transactions, the banks like J.P. Morgan will very quickly get rid of them as clients because it is not worth taking the legal or reputational risk to keep doing business with them. And again,